now.
Bet you're going fishing all of the time. Baby, going fishing too. Bet your life, your sweet wife is gonna catch more fish than you. Many fish bites if you got good bait. But here's a little tip that I would like to relate. With my pole and my line, I'm a going fishing. Yes, I'm going fishing. And my baby going fishing.
I'm gonna guess that that's pretty much self-explanatory. You got a pole and a line, you're going fishing? What? Give me a break. I'm sorry, Captain Obvious. That's just kind of... I don't even know where to go with that. I mean, what does he think he's going to do? Go mountain hiking? You got a pole, you got a line, you're going to go fishing? What does he think? He's going to ride a motorcycle? I don't know.
Go fly a kite.
Bowling?
Go fly a kite. There you go. I'd go with that.
Yeah. Now, look at... Robert pipes in, makes me feel foolish, and I'm like, what?
And I jumped right on that first opportunity.
I'm feeling a little picked on here. It's Fish and Frank here in the chair. And Robert across me and RJ running the equipment, our producer, buddy, pal, friend of mine. I'm feeling the love here. I got to tell you, I'm really feeling the love today. Well, we got a horrible show for you today. This is going to be awful. You know, top five as normal, and then weird jigs.
Very weird jigs.
Weird. I shouldn't say weird, just jigs. I should say lures with a weirdness to them. And we're going to kind of go through
uniqueness?
A little bit. Okay, uniqueness. It's not my mood. I'm in a... Okay, this is god-awful. I just don't know why, but I'm not happy today. I just... You ever wake up one of those days where you feel really great and you're just, you know, energized?
Today is not one of those?
Yeah, today ain't that day. You know, it's not like I woke up and go, oh, man, do I feel great. No, I feel like garbage. All right, you guys are going to have to put up with this. I'm telling you right now. I am not.
Fighting that cold for a while. It's a tough one.
Yeah, this has been a week going on with it. They got me in a chamberized thing here with plastic around me. I feel like John Travolta, boy in a bubble. All right. They're putting fans to blow my germs away from them. Okay, anyway, so I got cooties. All right. Tonight we're going to be at Harbor Nissan with Rick Murphy and some other folks. We're possibly going to be playing with some new reels coming out. I don't know. The guy was Japanese, and I don't know. He's lived in like the U.S., Canada for 40 years, and I had a hard time talking to him. I don't get that. But anyway, let's see. Yes, I'm grouchy. I can't handle myself. All right. Let's see. Let's start off with your top five, Robert. What do we got top five today? I'm thinking I would go with octopus, but I'll bet you're going to go with something simple like a snook or something.
Yeah, and I think that'll fall in the theme with some of these lures that we got here because I think a snook will eat every one of these that you've got picked out. You know, so, I mean, the snook have been
all right.
Incredible.
In that frame, okay, I got a buzzbait here.
Yeah.
Now, a buzzbait is basically a jig with a split rubber silicone skirt on it. On the top, though, sorry, boys and girls, instead of a willow blade or Colorado blade, it's actually got like a propeller on it, a big piece of metal bent on two ends to make it spin. And you're thinking that'd be good snookler?
I think so. I mean, the water temperature's kind of right now. You know, the topwater bite has been really incredible in the early mornings and even in the late evenings. And that buzzbait is made to literally just go right under the surface, make a lot of physical action, but it also makes a lot of noise. And they come in so many sizes that you can change the profiles up pretty good.
Yeah, I'm thinking that if I started off with something like a Zaraspook or a standard topwater, you know, right as, you know, just before daylight, maybe into that, you know, a few hours after. But as soon as the sun just started hitting the water pretty good, I would switch to the buzzbait with that. It's got that bright silver metal. And if you slow rolled it right where that blade's churning the top, and let that sun just pop off of that blade, just flash, 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 as it kind of chugs along the surface, slow rolling. I think that to me would be where I would kind of go to it. I would wait and get a little more sunlight on it. I'd start with something a little more obvious. Zaraspook, a top pup, a skitter walk, you know, Zip and Ziggy. And then just as I'm getting a little bit of sunlight to get that last topwater action out of it, I might switch to the buzzbait just to see, because it's going to glint the sun good, I think.
Yeah. No, I think that would be a really good idea. You know, and they're in that kind of pre-spawn, pre-staging up to move to the passes and offshore. So they're really, really going into the feeding mode of eating just about anything because they haven't really focused on the white bait yet. You know, the little ones always will eat the white bait, but your bigger fish tend to hit a variety of baits right now when they're going into that pre-spawn, trying to build up some fat deposits that they've lost over the wintertime, but also to build up some serious nutrients before they get ready to produce their sperm or their eggs for this spawn.
I know I could use some serious energy to produce something. I don't think I'm producing anything but waste at this moment. All right, so if I'm looking for serious snook action, I'm going to have to say trolling has probably become one of the most predominant snook catching activities around right now.
Especially for legal size fish. I think that's probably the key for anyone that's wanting to either catch one for dinner or just to catch a bigger snook in general. It seems like the bigger fish have been being produced on that trolling situation.
Well, I don't know if I feel like a general right now. I'm more like a corporal today. So if in general you're talking about it, I'm thinking maybe like a storm twitch, which has become the staple for trolling for snook.
Yeah.
And the ghost twitch. And then not the small size crystal minnow, but the next size up. I kind of like that blue mackerel pattern for the
trolling. Yeah, I think it's the F8.
Yeah, it's either F8 or F11. I don't remember which one.
Yeah, I can't remember.
But I should know my numbers better, but I'm lucky I know my name today. Hey, I'm George. Okay. If we're talking about trolling, what do you think the odds of trolling a buzzbait for snook would be?
I don't know. I've never tried it. I mean, I've never tried.
Never had the thought before 2 seconds ago when it popped on my brain. RJ, you fish buzzbaits, right?
I do. I would think that trolling a buzzbait, though, you're probably going too fast.
Well, if you're doing 2 miles an hour, that's actually a fairly normal retrieve rate. If you were, you know, just get the boat barely into idle and work it right along, you know, put your rod out 90 degrees offside of the boat so that you can get that within a foot of the docks and not have to get the boat that close. That way your boat's 6-7 feet away. I'm not sure that wouldn't work.
Yeah, I'm not opposed to it. I'm just saying, I'm like Robert, I haven't tried it before. And my impression of most of the spinner-type baits is usually the boat's moving too quickly. The average guy's not going to do 2 miles an hour. He's going to be chugging along a little bit. And
yeah, you'd have to go real slow with it.
Yeah.
You know, Roberts, any final thoughts before we drag this buzzbait thing to death?
No, I mean, I have no opinion on it. I've never tried it, never even given it a thought.
Neither had I until now. That's why the debate.
Yeah.
This is where we got to dig deep, figure out what's going on, and throw this thing out because I'm bored with it already.
All right. There you go. Perfect.
Okay. let's see. So, bombers, 15, 14 bombers would be good. I'd rather have a 15, though. Double treble hooks. I'm flattening the barbs on that treble hook because once I got two hooks, I might leave the barbs on the back hook, but mostly I've been doing a lot of replacement of the back hook with that VMC single hook.
Yeah, the inline inline single hook.
Yeah, it's a single hook that's made specifically to replace a treble hook on a lure, and make sure the point is facing up. You don't want it going down. You want it going up. So when the fish connects to it, comes through, hooks that upper jaw better, and really works out good. Now, in Venice, I hear the snook fishing up in Venice is doing real well.
Yeah, those fish are starting to move out into the intercoastal pretty good. So they're moving out a lot of those back creeks, you know, Blackburn Point. They've moved out of that quite well. And just all the small little canals up in that whole system. So you're starting to see a fairly good push of fish moving into the pass there. It still hasn't hit peak yet, but it's definitely very fishable
right
now.
Well, it's still pre-spawn. Yeah. I mean, you know, they're feeding up, building the eggs, building the sperm, getting ready for the big days and, you know, the party that's going to come. It's taking you all the way back to the 1960s. Everybody's going to get together. It's going to be a party.
Yeah.
Yeah, you poor folks who were born after the 60s. Okay. Anyway, you know, it's just, it always kind of surprises me. You and I, RJ, are from a different generation. Robert, you know, he's a baby, so he would know this. But they look at women who are like 60, 65, and they think, oh, how proper she is, and look at the grandma. And then you and I both know what grandma was doing 40 years ago.
I've got pictures.
Yeah.
But they'd be Polaroids.
Nice.
I mean, so I don't know why that brought it in my head, but I'm sitting here thinking to myself, yeah, grandma, okay. Yeah, commune grandma. I don't know what's good. All right. Next. Anyway, we won't blow your cover, grandma. Never mind. Your grandkids will never know. All right.
Now, in those passes, I would probably be using, like, what you've got here is the
isn't it great when he can just pop right back in with in those passes?
That's his job, yes. go back to the passes, Robert.
Got to keep these guys under control here.
Good luck with that one.
No, it doesn't work out very well. But the bucktail is probably one of the best classic pass lures that there ever has been around.
And bucktail performs differently. When you're using a bucktail jig, I mean, for some reason or other, bucktail is the only material, and it's literally deer hair. They get the tail from deer that are either farm-raised or, you know, they buy them from hunters or whatever. And they use the hair off of that tail because when you pull it forward, it goes very, very small and kind of shrinks into a thing. But as soon as you pause it or stop it, it puffs up and becomes 4 or 5 times the diameter of what it just was. And then you pull it again, and it narrows right back down. But every time you lift your rod, it gives it a very small presence. And then as soon as you stop at the top of your lift and go to let it fall, it puffs. And then it goes small again and then puffs as it hits the bottom again. It's a very unusual, and there's no synthetic material that can do that.
No.
Only bucktail does it, and that deer hair is unbelievable for catching fish. Taking us on a side note here, I have a Spro chartreuse jig head. And this Spro chartreuse jig head is probably the hardest to find lure you can get right now. We're ordering them by the dozens and dozens, and we're having a hard time getting them. Every time I order 6 in, somebody buys 4 of them, the next guy buys the next 2, so we've been trying to get them in the 48s and all that. 3/8, 1/2 ounce, 3/4 ounce, and 1 ounce, most popular sizes. And I think what it is the watercolor out there. The watercolor, when it gets clear, bright colors come to life. Now, when you have clear water with a light stain to it, pink is everything. Yeah. Everybody wants pink. That's going to be the key. But once that water loses that kind of brown stain and becomes clear or clear and a little cloudy, it's all about chartreuse. Yellow chartreuse, that makes the game. If for some reason or another, and I was thinking, what nature has the chartreuse? Spanish mackerel.
Yeah,
They've got mackerel. Some chartreuse on them, and we got a lot of little Spanish mackerel. A lot of fish follow the mackerel up in here, and cobia actually are following around right now.
Oh, yeah.
And it's the cobia that are hitting the chartreuse stuff.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I've noticed that we've been selling a lot of the chartreuse, but never really clicked with the water clarity, but chartreuse is always kind of one of my go-tos. I either have white or chartreuse. Those are pretty much the only 2 color bucktails I have.
And I use the Green Ghost a lot. And
well, yeah, but that's still white.
But it's got a darker green feather in it, but you could argue a little chartreuse on it. But the thing is right now, the guys, the cobia will see and go out, capture, eat chartreuse. We don't know what's going on with it, but we know that's happening. Now, the one thing about it is it doesn't seem to work as well if you're throwing just the bucktail. The guys now have found out it's the Gulp trailers and the Texas chicken. Now, the Texas chicken has green on one side and pink soda beet on the other side, kind of a red-pink. But it's that chartreuse green with the red-pink. No, neither one of these are that color, Robert. I didn't want to take them because we're so low on the wall.
No, but not.
I was doing these as a reminder. But they're a blend between the pink and the bright green, bright chartreuse, or the red and the bright chartreuse. I don't really know. I don't know how the fish actually perceive that color.
It's a shade of green.
Yeah, the green and the pink, or the green and the red. But both of them are on the curl tail, and there's three different curl tails. We've got the swimming mullet in this 4-inch size, which is a fairly small one, and they're using that on some of the smaller jigs, the 3/8, the half, maybe up to 3/4. But once you get to the 1-ounce, it's the bigger mullet with the curl tail on it, the bigger curl tails from Gulp, and it's all about that nuclear chicken color. Isn't it nuclear chicken?
Nuclear chicken. Well, some people call it electric chicken, and some people call it nuclear chicken, depending on the company.
But I think Gulp is nuclear chicken, right?
Yes.
Okay, so it's the nuclear chicken on the chartreuse bucktails, and it is a wow slamming.
Yeah.
I mean, Richie, crazy Richie, love him to death, but man's a wild man. He's a freak with this cobia stuff. If I ask him, hey, Richie, can you try out, see if this works for cobia? Oh, I'll throw it for an hour and see what happens. But, I mean, he'll put in an hour throwing it.
Oh, yeah. That hour's time, he'll utilize it more than most people would in months of using it.
And it's absolutely amazing. And he comes back with the reports. Okay, they didn't look at it. All right, they looked at it, but they wouldn't follow it. They followed it, and we got 6 out of 10 followed it, but 4 out of 10 wouldn't look at it. I mean, he breaks it right down into this. And Richie's an amazing fisherman, but he's focused. I mean, really focused.
Oh, very much so. Pretty impressive.
So the bucktail jig with, and it probably doesn't have to be a sproke. Pick one with a, what you're looking for is a chartreuse head, chartreuse tail, and the head should have a little bit of shine to it. And I think you can pick whatever brand you've got. If you got chartreuse jigs in your box, I don't know that I'd go down and spend another $4 or $5 on another jig, but I would definitely go chartreuse bucktail and nuclear chicken. You might be able to replace the Gulp with a small paddle tail like a
DOA
Calshad or a Bass Assassin, but it's going to have to be chartreuse or chartreuse and white.
Right. Yeah. Right.
You're going to have to stay to that. Maybe in the nuclear chicken color in those with the chartreuse and red or the chartreuse and pink with the paddle tail. I know some of the guys on the smaller jigs are throwing the paddle tail with it, but Richie's all about the curl tail, and I'm going with Richie every time.
And I've always been that way, too, when it comes to using a bucktail. I've always used a curl tail in conjunction with it to change, you know, for multiple species, for that matter. I mean, grouper fishing is probably where I was first introduced to it because it works so well for gag grouper and red grouper offshore, along with a couple other oddball species. But inshore, I just love to change it up with the versatility, and I'm going to go from a 3-inch version all the way up to probably a 5-inch version inside. Just to change that profile.
Yeah,
you're
going to
change how it sinks. You're going to change how it swims. You're going to probably entice a couple species and maybe chase a couple unwanted species away. That's probably one of the best things about a bucktail there is.
Are you hearing this? You're going to entice a couple species and chase a couple species away. RJ, how is he figuring which one he's chasing away?
Well, I don't know how he's figuring out which one is which, but I think that's true, depending on the type of lure you use.
Depending on the size of the profile of it.
Size of the profile,
you
right.
You might have a lot of little ladyfish in the area that are taking shots at it with that little 3-inch grub tail on it while you're trying to target snook, and you bump it up to like the 4-inch or the 6-inch grub tail in conjunction with it, and now you're going to keep those little ladyfish probably from hammering at it.
I'm just sitting over here thinking to myself, they both talk nice and even and quiet, so you don't think they're ganging up on me, but I'm telling you right now, I'm feeling ganged up on. I don't know what's going on here, but I'm feeling the burn here. You guys are, all right, I'm not going to let it go, I'm gonna move on to willow blades and jig heads.
Okay.
Because I'm tired of getting ganged up on this. I'm gonna move on to willow blades and jig heads. it's the old, something old is new again thing. Roadrunner did this on crappies and all that stuff.
Crappie and bass. I mean, they made them all the way up to like 1 ounce, if I remember it, because they tried to even get into the saltwater market at one time with it.
And now Strike King's come out with these new things. I don't even know what tour, I don't know what the heck that says. I guess I put on my glasses. I don't know if it says on there. I guess it's on all of them. All right. RJ, maybe you can figure out how to say this. Hang on. What does that say? All right. I've got the pack over to RJ. He's our resident brain here. All right. Tour grade.
Tour grade. Exactly right. Yeah, they had a great graphic designer who picked out some kind of stencil font that the R's and the G's and the A's and the D's all look the same. So, yeah, tour grade. That makes sense to me.
Yeah, I'm looking at this. I find this one's a little bit clearer. I'm like, oh, my God. Well, there you go. You see, let the blind guy see if he can read it. All right.
No, it's stupid.
All right.
But they're calling it a spin head.
All right, see, he gets to read the other side of the package. All right.
The spin head, basically what it is that's a willow blade that is attached to the bottom of the jig head, which is your kind of the idea like you were talking about with the Roadrunner. So you've got an actual jig head with a spinner that is attached literally right off the head. There's no extra arm on it or anything like that, just a little tiny piece so it'll spin a little bit. But it's right up close to the jig head, the head part of the body, and then you can add whatever body you want on for a tail section.
It would be really nice if somebody made an easy on bucktail for that. You know what I mean? You know, with the rubber silicone skirts, you can just stick it right on there, and it's held on by, excuse me, a very tight rubber band. But there's nothing like that for bucktail. You actually got to tie it on and then glue it in place. But I think that would be awesome with a bucktail on it with that little willow blade underneath. Now, a willow blade is long and narrow. Colorado blades are round. Indiana blades are kind of teardrop shaped. At least I think I'm getting all those the right way. It could be.
No, I think you're right.
Yeah. Well, you know, I am the boss on the show and I write the paycheck. So, you know, say I'm right.
Robert, we get paid?
Sometimes. I was going to say, yeah. You're getting paid? Yeah.
See, you guys thought I was in this. Never mind. Okay. Anyway, the bucktails with this would be awesome, but I think on further reflection, I think the bucktail would interfere with the willow blade.
I think it would change it up a little bit. I mean, if you want to have a skinny profile.
I think it would hit. You'd have to tie it so far back that. Yeah.
Well, that's true.
Yeah, I was just looking at it thinking, well, that was dumb, Frank, because, you know, putting. It would be awesome if you could make it work, but as soon as that bucktail puffed, it would hit the willow blade, you know. But I think these things can be awesome for mackerel, for snook, for a lot of these fish, because the willow blade, it adds flash from the sun. You know, it's going to glint off and catch a little bit of sunlight here and there, but it also creates a very extreme amount of noise going through the water. It pulses, and it gives you a different sound in it.
So not only do you have the visual attractant, but you actually have the vibration attractant to it all at the same time. And then depending on the tail situation you put in, you could add something that's either got scent pre-impregnated into it or add your own scent to it. So now you're covering all three of the senses for the fish.
All right. I mean, I know tarpon will hit spoons, right?
Yeah.
So if they made this, like, jig head, this one for the spin head, it's, I don't know what the heck it is. It looks like a half ounce. It's kind of white-blue, but the hook looks like it would be good enough for, I'd say, a tarpon up to, like, 50 pounds or something like that. What do you think the odds of hitting that on with a tarpon with that would be?
I think a juvenile tarpon in any of the canals or in the river system would probably hit it without a problem.
I think that would be a great one to put like either a curl tail or a paddle tail on. And I think tarpon would beat the t- tar out of that thing with that willow blade on it. RJ, any ideas?
I've always liked the willow blade. And going back to what Robert was saying, I think the vibration is the most important thing from a spinner blade. Yeah, you want the flash, but it's what are the fish hearing that attracts them to the flash? And I think the willow does an incredible job of whatever its vibration is that it puts out. So I love the willow blades.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and going back to tarpon, you know, they're another fish that has a big lateral line down the side, and they tend to work in the dark anyway, so they're listening all the time. And that's what usually attracts them to what they're going to hit. Like if you go to Lighthouse Hole and you're fishing, you're jigging there, they can't see anything. They were, you know, we were talking years ago, let's put the glow-in-the-dark paint on our lures and things like that. But it always worked out that whatever was making noise down there, little rattle things that they put on the side, those are the guys that were catching them out of the hole.
You know, he's way smarter than he looks, isn't he?
Pretty good at that.
Yeah, he's actually pretty smart. You know, here we thought he was just our technical genius. All right. My God. Okay, go on with tarpon, Robert. What's going on out there? Sorry, but I'm going to go with the one bait. And here's, you guys can guess. What's the one bait that they're going to hit above everything else, but no one will use on tarpon?
You got it, RJ?
No idea.
Been using it for years, been teaching people about it for years, and it's just this year actually finally starting to catch on. Shrimp. Shrimp's by far the number one bait to use for early season tarpon.
Now, it won't be good in a month or maybe even in a couple weeks, but the first few weeks of tarpon, it's all about shrimp. You're going to get more tarpon on shrimp than anything else. And
so are we talking live shrimp now?
Live shrimp.
And everyone thinks they need like a jumbo shrimp or a hand-picked shrimp or whatever they want to call it. But honestly, if it's about 4 inches long and, you know, basically thick, you know, a little thicker than a dime or a nickel, you know, just a little girthy bait, doesn't have to be giant, they'll eat it. You know, if it's just barely castable like you would use something for snook or redfish, they're gonna crush it. And it's mainly just to have that little bit larger profile out there. It has nothing to do, because I've seen them eat peewee shrimp back in the days when the phosphate dock was out there, and we'd sneak out on the dock with the lights. You'd watch tarpon come up and roll on a shrimp that was 2.5 inches long. You know, I mean, that was pretty normal. But we use that little bit bigger one just for the profile more than anything else. And
now,
Frank's got a really good idea with that, with some of those.
With the fish bites.
Yeah.
Now, if I'm going to go out after tarpon, and right now, this week, I would say, for, you know, the next 7 days, it's still going to be good. It should be still good for the next 7 days. But I would take a fish bites strip bait and with the shrimp flavor on it. And that way, the best shrimp for tarpon are about, if you laid it on your hand, it would go from your little finger to your index finger, maybe from if you put your hand flat, the top edge of your thumb to the bottom of your palm. Those are your best tarpon sizes, maybe even a little bigger, but those are kind of the minimum. But if you got something that's not quite that big, I'm going to put a casting bubble between my leader and my hook. And I might put just something tiny, like the smallest split shot I could find, about 6-8 inches in front of the hook to keep that casting bubble from interfering with the bite. And just so I can actually get some distance out of the cast. Then I'm going to put a piece of that shrimp flavored fish bites strip bait. And it's a long, narrow strip, about 1/2 inch wide, and cut off about a 4-inch piece, put it up on the hook, and then put your live shrimp on, but go through the mouth of the shrimp out the top of the head so that the horn on the top head of the shrimp and the point of the hook are identical. Snap the horn off top of the shrimp, even on the small ones, and cast that for them. Now, you can use the bubble, you can not use the bubble, but the fish bites will make that 3-inch shrimp appear 4-inch.
Right.
And it's got that amazing scent, amazing flavor. Fish bites is awesome.
Yeah. You know, and this year has been, well, I've been doing it for 20 years. You've been doing it for 30-plus years. This is the first year where I've seen the size of the shrimp pretty small for what they should be for this time of year. Literally. No matter where they're getting them from. It's just they've been, even the ones I'm hearing about, even in Miami, are down a little bit in normal size.
Yeah, this was the year where we never saw the big jumbo shrimp. We get 25% of the big shrimp we normally get at this time of year.
Yeah.
So when you picture what I was talking about with the live shrimp and the fish bites, is picture the shrimp is sitting on a sled. And because it's about a half inch wide, it's going out the back, and the shrimp is literally like hanging onto a surfboard.
Yeah.
You know, his legs are wrapped around that. It just gives it that little bit bigger profile. It's got a wonderful scent and flavor. Fish bites are made right here in Florida, and it's an awesome lure, our awesome imitation bait.
Right.
And it's been proven for decades. It's one of the number one artificial, you know, fish stuff on the East Coast of the United States.
Yeah.
But it never really caught on here in Florida. We're one of the only stores that really stocks fish bites because I believe in it. I've used it. I've used the saltwater version. I was on Lake Hopatcong in New Jersey, and the closest bait shop was way away, and there was all these sunnies around there, the small little fish. I wanted to catch them. So I just taken my scissors, and I cut little pieces of the fish bites, put it on my, I had a number 8 little wire hook, and I was just dropping them down, catching the heck out of the panfish with them up there in Lake Hopatcong. Big freshwater lake in New Jersey, and I've done the same thing in Florida. I've done it all over the place. And whether you get by the freshwater version or the saltwater version, people always say, well, there's no shrimp in freshwater. And that's ludicrous. In Florida, all our freshwater canals and lakes have shrimp in them, freshwater grass shrimp.
Yeah.
These fish grow up eating shrimp flavor. It works freshwater and saltwater. They say, well, why would it work in New Jersey? Well, why would a nightcrawler work in South Florida?
Yeah,
these fish have never, ever, ever in their life seen a nightcrawler until you put one on a hook.
Yeah.
So, same reason. That's why that shrimp flavor works everywhere around the country, freshwater and saltwater.
Well, and that's why some people are extremely successful at their fishing in general, because they think a little bit outside of the box.
Oh, you think I'm outside of the box, do you?
Just a little bit.
Wait a minute here. We'll take a vote on this. I'm absolutely quiet, normal.
No. You're right. You're an introvert. Yeah. I totally blew that one. I don't know how I overlooked that.
Yeah, I'll vote for that, too.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you take a census.
Just to keep him from being violent, you know, just, yeah, we'll go along with that, Frank.
All right, where would you go find tarpon, Robert?
The number one place for me to pick is going to be out by the pass. You know, Boca Grande Pass, a little bit on Captiva Pass, but Boca's going to be your most consistent spot. There are some fish in the harbor in the 20-foot holes. Down by Two Pines and up and down the intercoastal, but basically if you don't want to fight any of those fish in the pass or the people that are going to be in the pass, your only guaranteed other option is running down to South Sanibel off of Knapp's Point. Those two places are the most consistent, but water's warming up. It's that time of year. You're going to see a lot of fish moving around, so you could go out. And as you're running along, always keep your eyes open for fish because there's so many fish starting to show up, and resident fish and all of our migratory fish that are coming in from the Gulf of Mexico, from Brazil, Central America, and even as far as Africa. Those fish are starting to come in from the Gulf and heading in. So you've got a lot of different fish coming in.
All right. Now, to me, I don't know why I had this great thought. I had something wonderful to say. Well, you're not going to hear it because I can't remember what it was. You ever get to the point, RJ, where you're walking from this room, I walk over to the next room, and I forget why I'm there?
Happens all the time. I don't even know why I'm in here.
Well, you know, that makes three of us, but, you know, we're not going to say anything about that. Anyway, with the tarpon, one fish leads to another fish in a lot of cases around here. And Spanish mackerel are really showing up. And how many guys out there and gals are from up north and did freshwater fishing? Just raise your hand. Oh, yeah, that's quite a few of you. I can see a bunch of hands going up. How many of you have an inline spinner, like a rooster tail, a bang tail, a MEPS? And you want to go out and catch some Spanish mackerel. Well, are you really using those lures anymore? Probably not. They're sitting in a tackle box somewhere rotting away. And they're awesome on the Spanish mackerel. Just take out those old inline spinners and throw them. What else are you doing with them? I mean, you're just literally sitting there watching them decay in the box. And bigger beetle spins, inline spinners, small bass spinner baits. They're noisy, they're flashy, they're everything a mackerel loves. And you can have a great time and use up some stuff because you're probably going to lose a lot of them. But what do you care? You're not using them anyway.
Right. And the fish eat the dickens out of them. And like you were talking about with your casting bubble earlier, some of those little inline spinners were made for people, you know, that were fishing for trout and some of the small creeks and streams where they're using 2-pound test. Easier to cast. These little lighter baits, even though they work really well here, you sometimes have to weight them down, and that casting bubble is going to work absolutely amazing for getting that distance.
Well, the casting bubble, we talk a lot about it. It's a clear plastic round
bobber
bubble, yeah, that has a peg in the middle of it, and you pull the peg out, and you put it underwater, and you get it entirely full of water. Now, the plastic bubble itself probably weighs 1/4 gram. But once you fill it with water, you can throw it in the air. Water's very heavy, but water in water is nothing. And it allows you to basically get a good long cast and then have the what you're casting, unlike a lead weight, which wants to drag something to the bottom,
yep.
Once this hits the water, it's not going to float or sink.
Yeah.
So it's a perfect way to get these little tiny baits out there a ways. And it's a fly fishing trick I picked up. Back, I was guiding people for trout up in the Rocky Mountains and stuff, and I always took some nice spinning stuff with us, because if you get on a lake, a fly rod's a pain in the butt. You've got all these trees behind you, you can't cast, and a lot of these, when you walk out 5 feet into the water, it drops down, it's 15 feet deep. You don't have a nice sloping shoreline, so you can get out there and get a back cast for your fly rod. So you just try and back cast, you're in the trees. So we take the spinning, casting bubble, put our fly leaders off of that, and with the right stuff, it's absolutely amazing. You get these huge casts out of it, and we'd leave a little tiny air bubble in the casting bubble just to keep that dry fly up by the surface. And just slow reel across, and boom, 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 lots of fish. We've really brought that into the world of saltwater. Speaking of something weird here, Spooltech, just on a kind of a weird note, they're actually doing fairly good on tarpon and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
But what it has is a hook, and when the guy designed it, he put the hook on a steel leader and then put a winding mechanism in the head of the lure. So you crank that steel leader in on a little spindle or spool, and it goes up inside the head of the lure. And then on the back, they put a soft plastic paddle tail. But when the fish hits, it pulls away from the head, so that hook isn't the, it's just a single hook you're dealing with. The lure is actually about 14, 16 inches in front of there. And it's a pretty cool concept. I was just thinking of lures on the weird.
Yeah, no, and they've been, the guy who designed it, I mean, it's a very, very unique design, but the paddle tail that it's got on it is pretty impressive with the thumping action that it's got compared to some of the other paddle tails out there. So you've got the unique detachable body to the hook, whatever you want to call it, and then that vibration to the tail is really pretty devastating, and it comes in three different sizes. You got a 4-inch, a 6-inch, and a 9-inch, and the 6-inch and 9-inch are the most popular.
You ever seen one of these, RJ?
No, I have not.
It's one of the most popular snook lures in the passes. A lot of guys in the last couple of years have really jumped on to using it in the past. But I actually called the BS card on the owner of it several years ago that he said it would hold up to tarpon on that big 6-inch one. And I took it out to try to break it on tarpon, and it actually surprisingly held up through several fish. You know, it was he proved me wrong without a doubt.
It was pretty awesome. I'm over there, and I just walked over to RJ's in the production booth over there. And I'm showing him the lure that I pulled the hook out from inside the head. And his mouth just dropped open on it.
Yeah, I got to have jaw surgery now. Wow. Now,
that see is, the little crank on the side
yeah,
of the head?
Yeah, it's
just
got
go
a,
ahead and crank
it's,
that.
It's got a little star-shaped crank, yeah. and it pulls. You pull the hook back in again, but then the hook pulls out pretty easy. So I see where that works.
Yeah, it winds the leader up inside the head, and then your hook sits perfectly flat up against the body like a normal jig head would.
And I think that what that does is it probably takes the leverage away from the tarpon.
That's exactly
so
what
he can't,
it does.
He can't flip it out of his mouth because that part's not in his mouth now, right?
Yeah. Yeah. You don't have that way heavy cool. pendulum effect of yanking it out of their face.
So this is a good compromise between the breakaway lures that they made those illegal, didn't they? With the big lead bobber, the lead weight on it. And I remember diving lighthouse hole a couple of times, and down on the bottom of the hole it's peppered with balls of lead and these giant tumbleweeds that spin around because there's like a spinning current down in the bottom of the hole, and they look like giant tumbleweeds, and they're just rolling along on the bottom. But those are the two things you see down in the bottom of the hole is lots and lots of monofilament, tumbleweeds, and tons and tons of lead. So if lead had any real value, I'd go into a different business than the radio business because I know where there's plenty of lead to get.
Actually, it's going up pretty high now.
Yeah,
lead's actually getting up there. What's funny about it, people say, well, they made that breakaway illegal. It's always been illegal. You are never, ever, since I've been an adult, now we're talking from the 70s, you're not allowed to go out there and throw lead into the water intentionally.
Right.
You're not allowed to throw tin cans. You're not allowed to throw plastic. You're not allowed to throw, you can't take the garbage from your house and go out and dump it in a river. Right? So whatever made them think breakaway jigs were ever legal? It's not.
Yeah, and you know, a lot of people thought that they were made illegal because it was some great advantage on catching tarpon, but I don't know if it was necessarily all that big of a deal versus the environmental impact.
Well, it was.
You know, you see these things on the bottom, and they've all got a white film on them.
Other people. That's the only reason that became the big issue that it was. And I go back to, you know, you got to think World War One. In World War One, everybody was motivated by positive motivation. Think of World War One. Over there, the Yanks are coming, and we're these great people. Well, they found out that it was pretty nasty. So by World War II, they learned how to make caricatures of the enemy, and, you know, these people are horrible. We have to go stop them. And that became the theme since World War II. Prior to World War II, everything was done on positive motivation. Since World War II, people have been done on negative motivation. And so that's what they were doing there. It was just, these are bad people, we have to stop them. And it was just two people fighting over the same water who wanted to fish different ways.
Right.
One is not better than the other. And they both used breakaways. All the live bait guys wrapped a piece of copper wire through the lead weight and lightly wrapped it around the leader so it could drop down. But when the fish hit, the lead weight fell off. The jig fishermen put them on with a light cable tie zip strip, and when the fish hit, it fell off. They were both doing the exact same thing. And much to the live baiter's surprise was that FWC, when they said no breakaway, they meant no breakaway,
yes.
So they had to put the sinkers on the line, which meant they still hooked up fish, but the ones hooked up to in the boat, the ratio there went way down because now you got this lead flying all the way around, dislodging the hook.
Yeah.
So it was really two people doing the same thing differently. And it was funny, but you know, I might be a little too overly wrapped up in history. You know, I should maybe only think of history as what's happened over the last week. But I like looking backwards in time. I think the only way you know where you're going is if you know where you were.
So, I would agree with that.
Anyway, getting into the fishing here, when the Spanish mackerel come in, what does Spanish mackerel bring in, Robert?
What do they bring in? Sharks.
Sharks.
Sharks follow them.
And there was no notes for that, boys and girls. That was straight off the top of his head. I mean, this guy is so on the money. Come on, Robert. Give me a little.
It's part of the food chain. You've got the Spanish mackerel are coming in, following the glass minnows and the bait fish. You know, threadies, white bait, all that good stuff. And then, of course, the sharks are going to follow the Spanish mackerel, you know, and you're also going to have some bluefish and some other oddities in there. But the Spanish mackerel are a huge food source for sharks. So black tips, bull sharks, occasional lemon, your juvenile hammers almost always are following the king mackerel schools. People are always like, certain times of year, oh, yeah, I saw a 6-foot or 7-foot hammerhead out there 10 miles out while I was out trolling around. And it's like, during king season, those hammers are small enough and agile enough where they can keep up with those king mackerel. So that's very, very common.
All right. Now, we've got the, in the holes in the harbor right now, you've got Spanish mackerel throughout the deep holes, hit or miss on them because they're always moving, and you and them got to show up at the same time.
Yeah.
We got Kobe over by the reef. Up in Venice, we've got some great snook fishing. We're seeing some really good fishing up towards Venice. Coming into Lemon Bay, what would you say the predominant fish in Lemon Bay would be right now? Because that's kind of between us and Venice as your wide point of the intercoastal.
In Lemon Bay itself, along the intercoastal, it's basically been snook. Snook has been the most talked about fish this whole past week up in there.
All right.
You know, now, trout's been eh.
So with the snook going along the mouths of the canals, because snook don't know, they're looking for a certain salinity of water. Snook can't stick their head up out of the water and go, oh, look, that's the condo at such and such point. Oh, see the big old pine tree? They're underwater. All they're doing is seeing what's right in front of them. And they go out, and a snook will leave the very backs of the canals, coming out to go to salt water, good salt water, and looking for a pass where the water's flowing through.
Right.
And I don't believe they can tell the difference between the end of a canal, a larger canal, and Stump Pass. When you're underwater, how would you know the difference?
Magnetic pull.
Magnetic pull?
Well, I don't know.
I got to hear this one. Yeah, I'm taking my notebook out now.
I'm reaching here.
Yeah.
All fish, actually, and all animals go by some type of magnetic pull anyway for traveling
or migrating. I think you got a magnetic pull there, buddy. I'm telling you.
You know, they all come back. Why is it that sea turtles come back and nest on the same shores every year? Why is it that salmon come back to the same stream every year? They have a built-in GPS in their own mind just for survival techniques, and they believe a lot of it has to do with
it. I have a GPS in my own mind.
Uh-huh.
It takes me everywhere I don't know that I'm going.
Yeah, exactly.
So, all right. One of the coolest things going on out there right now, one of the most amazing things you'll ever see, and I'm not really endorsing fishing for these, by the way, and I was thinking about it on the way up here because it's truly one of the most spectacular phenomenons you're going to see, and that's 5,000 black drum all in a spawning school.
Yeah.
And they're literally, if you're in 15 feet of water, you see them boiling at the surface, and you see this cloud of mud coming behind them. And this is something you should see. I'm not really sure this is something we should fish for. I'm torn on this one, and I'm usually a big advocate for, well, there's fish and let's fish for them and all that. I'm not sure I'm all up on that. I think you need to go see it and see what it's about, but try to resist throwing a line in it. This is the first time I've ever said that. I never really thought I ever would, but it's such a phenomenal phenomenon to be able to see 1,000, 5,000, 60-pound fish acting like minnows. I mean, yeah. Just squirming and running and going back and forth and doing that whole spawn thing. I'm just not sure. You know, I can remember back in the 70s, and I'm, you know, partying up a little bit. I really hated to be annoyed myself during that time. You know, it's like, quit banging on the door. Go away. I don't want to answer the phone. I don't want to knock on the door. I'm not sure we should disrupt it. Okay, you guys can speculate on this. Maybe I'm getting a little soft in my old age.
No, I mean,
it's okay. I could be wrong. This could be a completely random, I'm having a Disney teacup moment here.
Well, you're definitely having one of those. There's no doubt about that. But there is a lot to be said with some of these big spawning aggregates of any fish, whether it's cow nose rays, the black drum, even redfish, you know, going out there and finding some of these fish that are really, truly in the middle of doing their actual spawn. I think with how much we have, I mean, to be, I'm being totally blunt, we've destroyed so much in the last 40 years in the oceans. You don't get to see that anymore except for on Blue Planet. It's a National Geographic moment that you're actually witnessing out there, and I think you should really take advantage of it and cherish it and
so,
watch that.
RJ, do you think I'm soft in the head? Do you think I'm getting old? Do you think I've succumbed to the Bambi moment, or do you think that might be a real thing?
Well, from what I've read, the viability of any spawn in saltwater is under 5%. So 95% of what's being produced doesn't produce any baby fish or, you know, fertilize eggs and things like that. So you get into something like that where you disrupt the spawn, you know, by going through it on your boat or starting to throw lures and stuff in there, or even pulling some of the big females out that are producing all the viable eggs. You're probably right. Leave them alone. Let them do the spawn thing and catch them when they're not spawning.
Well, all that being said, I'm going out tomorrow and fishing for them. I hate to say it. I had this moment. It was like one time I had a little moment here.
Got us both,
Robert. I was like,
yep.
You know, and I just wanted to see what the reaction would be. I'm going fishing for them tomorrow. Maybe I won't ever do it again. But tomorrow I'm going out, and I don't know. Maybe I can resist the urge to throw a line in them.
Yeah.
But I know where they are, and I'm going to go looking for them tomorrow. And I will try, and I will let you know next week, same fish time, same fish channel, we're going to go tomorrow and see about these fish. But I can't tell you, I'm stuck in the duality here. Do I want to do this? Should I do it? Do I want to? Should I? I don't know. Anyway.
Well, and it's good to educate people from both perspectives of it, because, I mean, fishermen should be conservationists, too. I mean, we should be able to consume some of what we eat and have a good time with that as far as a meal goes. And then there's other avenues of, okay, we do fish for some species for fun, you know, like big black drum. Most people won't eat big black drum because of the worms that are in them. So, but at that point where they're at a crucial point in their spawn, why mess with it and just sit back and enjoy it and take advantage of it another day?
Make a note. We are going to go get a biologist, and we are going to do a show on those parasites. I want to know when they start with the fish, when they leave the fish, how they get in, how they get out. We need to do a show on those goofy parasites in the fish, the giant sperm in the fish, because this is what they look like. They have a big round white head and a long, skinny, squiggly tail. We got to find out everything about that parasite. We got to do a show about
that.
That's
not a spaghetti worm, I don't think, that's in the black drum. That's the ones that form inside trout and some of the other species.
It looks like the same ones to me. So,
it might be.
All right, we need to touch on the Gulf of Mexico quick. What's going on, like, off the beach and then out? How the mackerel is out there in, what, 15, 20 feet of water out to about 40?
Yeah, that seems
so. What's going on out in the Gulf? Give me an overview.
This has been the first week. You know, this week has been without real serious wind, so quite a few guys have been going out. You got from basically a mile to 10 to 12 miles out, you've got a lot of Spanish mackerel, quite a few king mackerel still around. Obviously, the grunts, porgies, sheep's head are starting to thin out a little bit out there offshore, but your bottom fish have been really good near shore. Your cobia really starting to show up better numbers out there on the reefs. Barracuda really doing well out there. And you're starting to see some of our migratory sharks that are following the tarpon migration. Some
what type of sharks are migratory?
Pretty much all of them. But your bull sharks.
I was going to say, you're not getting away with that. I need some names here, buddy. Come on. I got the spotlight here. I'm going to get my rubber hose out. I want names. I want addresses.
The two biggest ones that everyone has always seemed to be interested in, whether they love them or they hate them, is the bull shark and the hammerhead. Those two species follow the food chain, and tarpon are showing up. So you're seeing a lot more bull sharks and a few more hammerheads out there at some of those nearshore reefs, or even way out there swimming on the surface following those tarpon schools across the Gulf here.
All right. Now, one of the things that you can do right now, whether you're getting out in the Gulf, there's some amazing fishing out there. The cobia are kind of hitting the same thing, whether they're in the harbor, in the backcountry, or out in the Gulf. It's all about the chartreuse right now. Main reason is the water's almost identical in the back bays as it is in the Gulf. And we're not seeing a big variant in salt, color, anything. We've got a lot of the similar water. So using basically the same stuff. I would say getting offshore right now, we're starting to have any day now, we should have the squid hatching out. A lot of baby squid out there. Squid's going to become more of a predominant bait here. I usually think of May and June as squid months for as far as baby squid, because it goes all the way into July where we have the tiny little squid in Charlotte Harbor and out in the Gulf of Mexico. So try a couple of tube jigs while you're out there. I can't really think how much time we got left here, RJ. Oh, well, I don't hear any music to tell me I'm done. You know, I'm a visual person here. That's why I listen to music. I can visualize it. There it is. Fish and Frank in the chair. Robert in the chair across from me. And our producer, RJ, over there trying to make sense of all this. Thank you guys for listening, and we'll catch you next week.
Okay, we got it, boys.